I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lupica, MSNBC and MLB.com.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and you are listening to the Sports Reporters Podcast, the podcast incarnation of the long-running television program on ESPN, except it's twice as nice now in podcast world, Mondays and Fridays. And today we get the opportunity to talk about the divisional games in the NFL first and foremost. Later we'll wrap up the national championship game. I think the Clemson just scored again, so we have to redo our stats. And we'll talk about the quarterbacks jumping college teams. But let's begin in the NFL here with some really fascinating matchups. Now the rubber meets the road. Wild cards have moved on. And one of those is the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles, which I think of the four games is the most fascinating because it would probably rank as the biggest upset if Philadelphia 9-7 on the season and a double doink away from being out of these playoffs already should somehow go down to the hardest place in America to play professional football and beat the New Orleans Saints. Does anybody think they have a chance to do that?
I do. I know I shouldn't. And I know that, you know, you both know me a long time, and I show up in the press box for big games, sometimes rooting for the best story. And it's nothing against the Saints. And people from the midseason point on have thought that they were going to go to the Super Bowl. The Eagles are the best story. And Mitch, you know, you talk about what an upset it would be. And I'm trying to remember the last time the defending Super Bowl champions would have been this much of a shock, even going on the road, if they win the game that the Eagles are about to play. And I'll say what I said the other day. I know that the way to bet is the Saints. But Nick Foles last year in the Super Bowl went up against the greatest quarterback of all time. And of all the things that happened in that game, he beat him straight up. And I have a feeling that at this point in this run for Mr. Foles, he is not going to be scared off by the Saints defense or the noise in the Superdome.
Well, I will respectfully take the other side.
Don't let anybody cut off that limb you're out on, Ryan.
There's a reason why teams don't repeat. There's a reason why teams don't repeat, and it's that teams have years. And it's there, and I think last year, the Eagles remain last year's story. And it's very nice and cute that they got this far, thanks to the double doink, and that's the reason they're here. Although, you must give the guy credit for tipping the ball. I forget his name already. And now it's officially a tipped or blocked kick. But it's nonetheless, it was a double doinker, and it came with an inch of going home. And I think they deserve to be home. And I think that we're going to find out that the New Orleans Saints are, to borrow a well-known phrase, they are going to prove that they are who we thought they were. And I would personally be not shocked, God knows, but arch the eyebrow surprised if the Eagles can pull this one off.
I think we're going to know probably in the first quarter, because the only thing that I think can derail the Saints is that week off itis thing, that somehow you come out and you're just not the same team you were in the regular season. It happens. It's inexplicable when it happens. We'll be well aware of it, I think, by the first quarter. If they're clicking on all cylinders, if they look like a team that just used the off week to polish things up and get healthy and get faster and play lights out, I don't think that Philly can hang.
But wait,
with them.
Mitch, you're arguing against your own theory about off weeks. Because you think it's a you generally think it's a problem.
I do, and I'm saying we're going to find out in the first quarter if the off week was a problem for New Orleans. If they don't, if Philly scores quickly and there's a turnover, you know, Drew Brees makes an uncharacteristic play or, you know, throws an interception, which he rarely does, then I think you're seeing that, you know, the whole mojo thing that carries you from week to week in the NFL, which is a huge part of the game, is missing. If they come out and go up 14-0, I don't think that Philly has the guns to come back and beat them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're on a roll of one seeds and even one versus twos. but one's for sure getting to the Super Bowl. So I think, and I know up here, it's the entire story up here in the Northeast quadrant of the United States of America. You desperately want that week off. You want not to play. You want to play as infrequently as possible to increase your chances of getting to the Super Bowl. So I don't know. Here this was a huge deal to have.
Isn't what makes Philly so hard to predict, though, guys, is that they're kind of two different teams now. There's the earlier part of the year where they were losing to Carolina and Minnesota and Tennessee and Tampa, and then there's the Nick Foles takes over in the middle of December and they beat the Rams and they beat Houston. They win Washington in a meaningless game, but they shut them out, and then they do what they did in Chicago. And if you're listening to the locker room talk, and this is what to me gives them a chance, they have that thing like, we believe in ourselves. You know, nobody else does.
I love that. You love that? I love that when it's us against the world, and nobody's given us a chance. Well, shoot, I just did.
You did.
That's the 21st century mantra of nonsense, utter nonsense. I hate it.
All right, let me ask you this, Mitch. I was going to ask you this, and Bob, I'll throw this to you as well. Do you have any concerns about the New Orleans Saints defense?
Well, yeah, you think of them in terms of offense, but I mean, they're not perfect. None of these teams are perfect. That's the thing. This is an interesting year that we had this great run of great offense in the beginning of the year. But even at that point, we were saying, well, one of the reasons that these offenses are scoring so much is that these defenses aren't so great. And starting with the Kansas City Chiefs, and certainly including the Rams and including the Saints to some degree. So yeah, it's still, we expect them to win by virtue of their offense.
Yeah, okay. I'm not too worried about it, Mike. I mean, you go look at their last, you know, 7-8 games that they played, and they're healthier now. They gave up, you know, 14 points to the Panthers. The Steelers scored the most on them with 28. Then you go 9 points allowed, 14 points allowed, 10 yeah. points allowed, 17 points allowed, 7 points allowed, 14 points allowed. That doesn't sound like a defense I'm worried about.
I take it back.
And they had a good win. they had a good win, even though it was at home against the Steelers. It was a game at that time that both teams needed, even though the Steelers needed it a lot more. I just think you can score against the Saints. And again, the unknowable thing about this game, and again, it is the Super Bowl champs, so they obviously, the crowd noise is different at the Super Bowl because it's evenly distributed, okay? The unknowable thing is how they are going to react to the force of the place. It's interesting that we're having this conversation because as good as the Saints have been, the place has become as much of a story as they are.
Yeah. And speaking of place, by the way, Nick Foles and Drew Brees went to the same high school.
I know, isn't that crazy?
I don't know how often that, if ever, has happened in a playoff round. Although many, many years apart, and Nick Foles was too young to remember Drew Brees, but Drew Brees remembers going back, you know, when he was already a professional, and seeing him. I think we're overlooking, and we won't on Monday, if the Saints win, how good a story Drew Brees is, too. You know, everything Nick Foles, because that's what just happened this past week. But we're forgetting that Drew Brees is also playing because this may be his last shot at it. And you know, there's a big story there, too. Drew Brees winning another Super Bowl and maybe going out on that Super Bowl is going to be a huge story. And the narrative will change once these games are played out, because now we've got Tom Brady and we've got Philip Rivers and we've got Drew Brees. We've got the old men of the NFL at quarterback all participating in this weekend. And that's going to dwarf the Nick Foles magic story by the time these games are
played. You know, if I'm hearing you correctly, I think you're saying that you like the Saints over Saint Nick. Is that what you're saying? Because that's what I'm hearing. You like the Saints over Saint Nick.
I do. I think the Eagles' magic ends this weekend.
Okay. Let's work our way back to the first game. We've discussed the last game, which will be on Sunday at 4:40. Okay. What about Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Your team, who always feel like the defending champs. Don't they always feel like the defending champs?
No, they do.
Even when you have to remind
yourself, was this a year they lost or they won? When was the last time the Patriots won? Okay.
So what do we think, Ryan, about the current wellness, the psychological state, the physical state, the emotional state of Touchdown Tommy and the Patriots.
I think his emotional state is very good. I think coming off the last game that he played, he looked like himself. He acted like himself. He was mobile within the pocket as he has been throughout his career in a way he was not even the week before. Granted,
well, he still looks like a tractor pull.
It was against but you know his thing was never look. He still had that sixth sense, that eye in the back of his head thing in the pocket. He moves well within the pocket. He's always done that. And he did that very well. Granted, it was against the Jets at the time when the Jets were already probably mentally on the half on the plane when the game started. But he did look better. Yesterday, guys, they had a 99.9%, I think, participation. One person had a partial practice. They were healthy. They're as healthy as you can possibly think you deserve to be at this point in the season. We know that the number one person whose health you're concerned about is this tight end. And he reports that he's feeling, you know, he's, according to him, he's feeling great. And he did look a little bit more like himself in the last game in a play that was called back due to a penalty, offsetting penalty, a very dubious one. And he caught a pass and then carried half of America for 10 yards, which he used to do, and he hasn't done that in a while. He looked like himself. All right. They're in good shape for this game, I think. Their concern, the number one concern, of course, number one, they were up against an intelligent quarterback and a veteran in Rivers. But keeping Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram off Brady is going to be a very big story of this game.
You touched on it right there, Bob. I think that the essence of this game is going to be how the opposing coaches successfully scheme for the quarterback. And that works both ways. I think that the key matchups here are the two guys that you just mentioned against Brady and Bill Belichick against Philip Rivers. Bill Belichick's had 2 weeks, and you know he's been preparing for you know either team that he would face, but I think they probably figured they were going to face the Chargers. And if he comes up with something that nullifies Philip Rivers, some use of pass rushing and linebackers and cutting off his second options and things like that, then the Patriots are going to win, which, by the way, they haven't lost, right, at home. This year, am I right?
That is correct. They're 8-0 at home.
8-0 at home. That counts for something. I refuse, absolutely refuse, from now until the day I die, and I don't care if he hasn't played in 20 years, I am not picking against Tom Brady until he proves to me that's a good bet. You know, and he loves these kinds of moments where everybody's starting to say, you know, he's not the quarterback he used to be. How many articles have you read this past week? He's the worst quarterback of the teams that are left here now. You know, he reads that stuff.
Who said that?
Go online. He's the worst of the quarterbacks that are left in the team in terms of his. They'll cite you some statistic or numbers this year or percentages against this or that. He's the worst. Point spread and differential odds of winning are the smallest of any of the favorites going in here. They'll find a million reasons why this is when the Patriots go down. And it will not shock me at all if we're talking Sunday night about, look at it, Patriots look like world beaters again. And can anybody beat them? So I am not picking against them, but my heart goes to the Bengals. I'm sorry, the Chargers. My heart goes to the Chargers because I want to see Philip Rivers finally get his moment. You know, I've watched Tom Brady do it enough times. And I think, you know, want to talk about a good story, Mike. Nick Foles and the Eagles, but Rivers is the best story.
There's nothing not to like. Really, there's nothing not to like about Philip Rivers. Father of nine, by the way. I mean,
and 8-1 on the way, right, Mike?
We
strive for accuracy here.
The crazy commute that he has
with a driver
day
and a 40-inch TV in the van.
Okay,
by the way.
So he is a good story, but obviously when you're in the ring with Brady and Belichick and the Patriots, you always filter your analysis. You guys are right. We filter our analysis of this game. You can break it down a million ways. Is Gronkowski, all that stuff is, okay? And it is this. How much does Tom Brady have left, not next year or not play until he's 45, this year? And Ryan, I was going to ask you, if they somehow make it to the Super Bowl, after what we've seen from them this year, and once again playing in the JV division of the National Football League, the AFC East, would this be as surprising a Super Bowl appearance as any they've ever had.
It would be the number one surprise since the first one.
Because you think
it would
be?
They were 11-5. Remember, they had to do it all on the road. They were 14-point underdogs, I believe, in the Super Bowl itself. That one will stand the test of time for them as the most improbable. But this would be number two. I want to read you something, guys, and I want you just to tell me if you think you put any remote stock in it. Okay. I quote from today's Boston Globe, Alex Speier: "A frigid reception. Since Philip Rivers became the Chargers' full-time quarterback in 2006, his team has played 11 games with a game-time temperature of 40 degrees or lower. San Diego / Los Angeles owns an 11-8 record in such games, though that mark drops to 1-4 in games where the temperature at kickoff was below freezing. Notable, given that the mercury is not expected to rise above the 30-degree mark at Gillette on Sunday. That said, it has been years since Rivers and the Chargers played in such harsh conditions." Do we put any remote stock
sure.
in any factor that into the analysis if for you in any way?
Absolutely. I mean, it is, by the way, Alex Speier is like a national
He's a gem.
Treasure.
We need to put a bubble around him. Keep him from the internet.
Mitch,
predators.
If you don't know Alex,
we don't want him transferring.
He focuses.
We're going to get to that.
He focuses mostly on baseball, but he is. It's the old line about Lenny Coppett that you just expect decimal points to come flowing out of his ears at some point.
Jimmy Cannon on.
Yeah, how can you not ignore those stats, guys?
And I'm just throwing it out there, and it's going to be 28 degrees or so.
I know Mitch loves Philip Rivers. I hear it. I feel it. I sense it.
I love Philip Rivers the same as you and anybody who writes for
a living. Don't be afraid to put your Philip Rivers heart on your sleeve. Don't you be afraid of that.
I love good stories. He's a better story than Tom Brady winning again.
Oh, no.
He is.
It'd be hearts and flowers all over the place.
Yeah. And so there's going to be a good narrative coming out of this one way or the other, because if the Patriots hold them off, then everybody's going to jump back on their bandwagon. And by the way, when we get to that game, it won't be so surprising if they host a game again for the AFC Championship, because I'm not so sure that the Colts can't beat the Chiefs. And so who knows where they'll end up. They may not have to leave home and could still end up going to a Super Bowl again. By the way, Max Kellerman, I'm looking just right. I just typed in Brady worst quarterback. Max Kellerman from ESPN. Brady worst AFC quarterback left in playoffs. So
well, that settles it. Damn it. I didn't know that. Oh, damn it, Mitch.
I knew that would be your reaction.
You didn't tell me that Max had weighed in that way.
I'm just pointing out that I'm not making this stuff up.
No, I didn't think you were making it up. I wasn't seeing that narrative this week. And again, when you look at the Patriots, I think Bob, can they put enough pressure on Rivers that Brady doesn't need a ton of weapons on Sunday afternoon?
They're not noted for their pass rush, no, but they have known to scheme up things. But they have a couple of people. Trey Flowers has turned into a very, very nice player, and he can. But they're not noted for the pass rush. We're always somewhat surprised when that factors into anything. Can they get hurries and pressures? Yeah, I mean, and you don't always have to sack to have a positive effect. As a defense. So can they? That's a great question. I don't know. But it's nothing that we always assume is going to happen. I mean, but, the other guys, yeah, that's part of their deal.
Mitch, did you think the day that they had the crazy ending against the Dolphins, okay, the play that everybody always tries and never works, that they somehow, that all the dominoes would have fallen into place, that not only did the Patriots get the bye, not only did they get the game at home, they get it on a cold day against the team from, wait for it, Southern California.
Yeah, well, that's the way things fall for the Patriots.
It is.
And the rest
Boy,
of
isn't
the
it? That's yeah. so right, Mitch. Oh, my
and
God.
And the rest of the country gnashes its teeth at that. And it's, again, come on. And
aren't they the Yankees? People yes. still talk about yes. the Yankees that way, except the Yankees have won one World Series since the year 2000.
They're the
Patriots
Yankees,
are the Yankees.
Well, not just that actual discrepancy, but they're the Yankees without spending money. You know, like, you hate the Yankees because Yankees buy everybody. You hate the Patriots because they cut their guys and they still come back with more. I mean, they're the opposite financially. They pay Tom Brady, who takes pay cuts to make room for other guys, and they pick up guys like Josh Gordon and you know, cast-offs, and they turn them into superstars. So, you know, yes, there's going to be lots of teeth gnashing, and there ultimately will be a celebration when the Patriots are no longer the Patriots. And maybe it happens this weekend. Maybe the Chargers beat them by 20, and everyone says end of era, end of era, end of era. Until
here's
it
one
happens.
Thing about Tom Brady in regard to his seven compatriots quarterbacking on this weekend is I do believe, I'm guessing, he's the only one with an incentive contract, incentive laden, and incentives which were not met.
Well, so that changes everything because he needs the money. I've heard this.
Well, you know, they're going to have to do some serious retrenching in that household. I mean, she's not the highest paid model anymore. I think she's only like number five.
Yeah.
They're probably going to have to scrape by.
Just going in the wrong direction.
What can you believe in?
They're
going
to have
Mitch?
To scrape by
it.
With about 40 or 50 million this year combined. And you know, it's going to be, you know.
All I know is
that tightening in the household.
Tom Brady has become very good at keeping very quiet about the slights that he feels he's been given, and then turning them and using them to his advantage. He has heard himself written off already this season. He's just not the Tom Brady he used to be. He doesn't look the same way. He's never making it to 45. All the rest of that. You watch if he doesn't come out and play a great game and not rub it in anybody's
face. I can't remember this. I hope you can remember this because I asked this question honestly. Was he at least a Michigan quarterback who could beat Ohio State?
You know, I was looking at that.
I think he did,
or else he had a really big loss, one or the other. He did not play very long at Michigan.
Did he get one start? You think he got one start against Ohio State?
Yes, he did beat Ohio State.
He did.
Those were the days, huh, Bob? Yeah, his last three games for Michigan, they beat Penn State, Ohio State, and Alabama in the Orange Bowl. And he was a number six draft.
Well, Harbaugh could really coach.
Sixth round draft pick. Yeah, it wasn't Harbaugh. All right, now let's shift over to the other AFC game because I think this plays as part of the whole larger narrative as well. I said that it wouldn't shock me if Brady and New England, and here's the teeth gnashing again, get to stay at home and play for the AFC championship game. Of course, they would have to win, and Indianapolis would have to pull what is statistically or numerically, I guess, the biggest upset that could possibly happen. Although, you know,
is that the biggest spread? I don't even know. Is that true?
No, the biggest spread is New Orleans, Philly at 8.
No,
yeah, seven,
New Orleans, Philly is pretty big, but that's 7-6, whatever. But in terms of realistic, when you look at the problems that Kansas City and particularly Andy Reid have had in the postseason, and you look at 10 out of 11, which I think is where we are with the Colts here now. This is not a 6-1 game. This feels more like a 3-1 game. And would it shock either of you if the Colts pulled off an upset?
Oh, no, Mitch, no. You and Bob and I have been having this conversation, okay? And, you know, you guys know I love to say this. If you didn't know anything about anything and you watched the Colts last weekend, who would you think is the most well-rounded and complete team right now, this minute, on both sides? Forget the bye. You know, we can't talk about the bye teams. But of the games last weekend, who looked the best? They looked the best.
They looked terrific. Yeah, they did on both sides. And luck, just to think the narrative here, what a story will be if they had keep advancing. Thinking about a year ago at this time, the uncertainty. In fact, it was even a Where's Waldo thing, right? Wasn't it stuff about where is he?
Yeah,
he hasn't been heard from, kind of thing. You know, I mean, you wonder what was going through his mind about how uncertain he was about his future, even a year ago. And then to see him come back, and not just come back, but I think come back looking, you know, looking as good as he's ever looked, really, I think, last week. Yeah.
At a much younger age, his physical uncertainty, it's odd that it happened to two Colts quarterbacks, was not unlike Peyton's. You know, I mean, Peyton obviously was much older when people wondered if he would ever play again. But you had legitimate concerns that we had already far and away seen the best of Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, as much as he is going to be the spotlight marquee story, I would think that if we're talking about a Colts win on Monday, it's going to be largely because of this guy who none of us heard of a few weeks ago, Marlon Mack. Because for two reasons. First of all, he's running great right now. Second of all, Kansas City gives up a lot of yards on the run. They're actually much better against the pass. And they're pretty horrible against the run. I think they're, you know, three or four from the bottom. And if they manage to – this is one of those games, you know, like the Super Bowl when the Giants played the Bills, high-flying offense. You want to control the ball and stay on the field as long as you can. You want to convert a lot of third downs. You want Marlon back, you know, picking up 3 yards when you need two, and now it's a first down again. Why? Because you keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. And he is, you know, he can score quickly and he can throw quickly and they can rack up a pinball-like offense, but they can't do it when they're on the sidelines. And so if Indianapolis has a lot of long drives that result in touchdowns, this is going to be a game. And you cannot leave out Andy Reid, who is 1-4 with his playoff teams there and is the only guy to go to so many playoff games and have a losing record. And to go to one Super Bowl back when he was with Philadelphia and have lost that one. I mean, you can study the statistics left and right. He like leads the league in every kind of category that begins with no previous coach has ever had fill in the blank as many as and still in fill in the blank losses. So I don't know what it is with him. I like him, you know, as a coach. He does a fantastic job during regular seasons. What happens with him in the playoffs?
Mitch, I'm telling you, everything you just said is a major storyline in this game. But to me, it's not the biggest storyline. The biggest storyline is that the hot kid and the MVP of this season is 0-0 in games like this, okay? And if you can tell me for sure that you know that Patrick Mahomes is absolutely going to be ready for this moment, then you know more about this than I do. I know what I have seen in 16 games. But those 16 games are not this game. And even though the game is at home, I think, talk about unknowable things, the unknowable thing is going to be whether he is the Patrick Mahomes of the regular season, because you'd never know with a kid like this.
Mike, before we advance any more on Patrick Mahomes, we have to point out that isn't it heartening if you're the Colts and you're talking about extending drives, that on third down you've got a tight end to throw to?
Oh, you know what, Bob? I was thinking that. You were thinking right along with me because in the modern NFL.
I thought I was going to escape. I did.
Bob, hold on, Mitch.
Shut up, Mitch. Not so fast,
young man.
Just say his name and get it over with.
No, we were just, Bob and I talk about this all the time, don't we, Bob? That in the modern NFL, yes, we talk a lot about flashy wide receivers, but if you have got a big, rangy, fast tight end who can get you first downs, Bob, if you have a guy like that, it's like the Patriots and Gronk. You never let him go.
No, you never let him go. You don't let him out of your sight.
Eric Ebron, is that the guy you're thinking about? Because that's the guy I'm thinking of.
You watch when this game is on the line and Luck throws to Ebron, he's going to drop it.
Oh, is he? Is he?
Yes. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
He's the secret, Bob. He's the damn secret weapon, so secret anymore because he's
damn good. Back to Andy Reid. I want to talk about Andy Reid. What happens with Andy Reid in the playoffs? He's got a monster regular season record. And he's 1-4 with Indianapolis. He was, I think, 10-9 all those years with the Eagles. He's overall
Kansas
got
City.
A losing record.
Kansas City.
Yeah, with the Chiefs, sorry, and then with the Eagles. He's got overall a losing record for all the playoff games that he's been in. And I've read up on this. I've tried to say, okay, is it just coincidence? The theme that seems to happen, if you can point to any actual thing, is clock management and certain kinds of decisions as to how to run the offense in key moments. Happened in the Super Bowl. You remember that one, the Philadelphia against New England, where they were coming back.
Yeah, but they weren't going to win that game. They were two scores down, and I was screaming about clock management too, but they weren't going to win that game, Mitch. And
well,
they weren't the best.
By the time, they lost by three. You know, they weren't blown out. And I don't know. Are you willing to say that's all the past? And Patrick Mahomes and Hill and all the guys that he has now changes everything. And you might as well forget Andy Reid's past. This is Andy Reid of 2019, and we're all looking forward. Are you saying
Here's what I think. Yes, it's a valid storyline. he's not playing. And I would have to go back game by game, and I don't know the answer to this question. How many times I thought Andy Reid took the best team into these games that he lost? He certainly was not as good as the Patriots that year. He just wasn't, okay? And Donovan McNabb was a nice player. The other team had, what's his name? Giselle's husband, okay? So I would have to see how many times that I was shocked that either the Eagles or the Chiefs lost this kind of game. And he's not playing. And that's why I keep coming back to Mahomes. If Mahomes shows up, then all of that stuff goes out the window. But again, he is effectively a rookie playing his 17th game. That's the way I look at Patrick Mahomes, yep. Okay? And if you can tell me that you know he's going to be the MVP, Mahomes, then I say they're going to win the game.
I mean, he hasn't had 16 flawless games. He's had some absolutely spectacular games, particularly early in the first half of the season. But there haven't been 16 of them, but there have been some where there's been some youthful indiscretion, shall we say. And so, yeah, I think it's a fair – I think all this is fair. These are the questions that surround the game. It's what we're talking
about. And
Mitch,
I'm not dismissing what you're saying.
Right.
Yes,
this is
you
the
can't ignore his record. But he's
part
not
of
playing.
The deal.
By the way, last three games, loses to the Chargers by a point, loses to the Seahawks by a touchdown. And then clobbers the Raiders, because everybody clobbers the Raiders. But that's the last three times that we've seen Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. They've lost two out of the last three.
Okay, so
I'm just saying it wouldn't be a shock to see Luck and Indy pull off this upset. And even though it's a 6-1, and then there's that karma of that gives New England, if they win, a home playoff game to get to the Super Bowl. So there is that teeth gnashing in the background of this. That's all
and
I want
to
say.
By the way, we're talking
we'll
about coaches, and we're dissecting Andy Reid's well-known dossier, and Frank Reich does not have a dossier as a head coach, but he's got a very strong positive feel about him, that people, right? And so it's going to be interesting to see how he's no child, no kid, but this is his first time running a game of this magnitude. And so far, so good. The returns have been excellent, but so let's see how he reacts to this.
Yeah. All right. Last one is the Saturday night special. The Dallas Cowboys going out to Los Angeles to take on the Rams. Again, this is another one of those things like, okay, well, we know how good the Rams have been during the course of the year. They've been an offensive machine. How is Jared Goff and crew going to react out there to the postseason? And, you know, do the Cowboys have enough to take them on? I mean, I think this is the biggest spread. Not that spread mean anything, but I think the Rams are favored more in this game than any of the other teams.
No, New Orleans, the one I've seen, Mitch, New Orleans got 8 with Philly, and these guys are 7.
This is 7.5. It's close enough.
Okay.
I love this game, Mitch. Mitch, I love this game. I think in a lot of ways, even though the game we started off with today, which is the Eagles and the Saints, is obviously a huge marquee game, this in a lot of ways is the sexiest game of the weekend because – we jumped on the Cowboys have become a developing story. Okay, they've lost one game in like what the last 3 months. Okay, and Dak Prescott to me is playing at the highest level. Amari Cooper obviously changed everything. Ezekiel Elliott is as valuable a player as there is in the sport. And the thing about the Rams, guys, is they haven't shown up lately. They have not shown up lately, and I don't think the Coliseum is going to be as much of an opponent by far as the Superdome is going to be.
The more I think about it, Mike, I agree with you. The more I think a case can be made that they may have already peaked.
The Rams,
and
yeah.
This is why I think this is a very dicey game for them. And the Dallas is peaking, and they have peaked, I think. Even if they want to win the game, it doesn't mean I won't be right about that, that they've already peaked, and we'll see when it expires. But I wouldn't believe a month ago that I would feel this way about this game, you know, that's just even a game in my mind, but it definitely is.
Last two tough teams they played were the Bears and the Eagles, and they lost both games. Then they finished the season with wins against Arizona and San Francisco, San Francisco in kind of a shootout and a meaningless game. And, you know, I think a lot of this, the answer to a lot of this is going to be Todd Gurley. Yeah. Is he healthy? You know, I mean, I don't know. He wasn't last time we saw. They say that, you know, the time off has made a difference, but he is a huge part of what makes that offense go. And if he's hurt or if he's not effective, Goff is much more limited in terms of his options. And Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, I think, is going to be a huge part of this narrative. You know, I'm not a particular fan of his off the field, but he's a powerhouse on the field, and he is a third down converter, and he's a keep
him on the field.
Yeah, keep him on the field guy. Yeah. That's who Ezekiel Elliott is, and that's how you beat high-powered teams, high-powered offensive teams. You keep them on the sidelines, and when they finally get back in, if you're frustrated with your defense and you get a three and out, they start to get antsy, you know, and now they got to go sit again. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. We're all these games, guys, we're talking about the underdog has an excellent chance.
Yeah.
Nothing here seems, there's not a game on this slate that looks like, oh, come on, this is, you know, they don't even deserve to be there.
It's a wide open tournament, Mitch, too. And Bob, here's the thing. I'll just throw two things about this game at you, okay? Does anybody think that the Rams have been the same since 54-51 against the Chiefs? That's one thing, okay? And two, do you not watch the Cowboys? And feel that there's a growing sense of belief in themselves week to week and game to game all the way through the Seahawks game last weekend.
And no more talk about Jason Garrett, you know, either lately after all that speculation. But absolutely, I am. And we know the defense is sound. And they got a rookie linebacker going to the Pro Bowl who was an All-Pro, Van Der Esch. Absolutely, they're peak. This is what you want to do. They're trending upward. That's the very least we can say about them.
Well, they won 8 out of 9. They beat Seattle. You know, going on the road is always different than playing at home, and they do have a nice stadium that they play in. I think it's fairly big, Dallas, and this could be different. But you're absolutely right, Mike. This is not like going to New Orleans. Going out to play out in L.A. And the weather isn't going to be a factor and none of that stuff. So we'll see.
And Bob, by the way, when we're talking about the Cowboys, you know, when you have a chance to have a defensive genius like Rod Marinelli, you know, you think, you know what I'm saying, Bob?
Okay, now you're really pushing it.
Bob.
That would be 0-16 Rod Marinelli, right?
Bob, you know, obviously, though, they didn't see his potential in Detroit. That he wasn't allowed to fully develop his potential.
Hey, listen, if you want to go down that road, Mike, Marty Morningweg, Jim Schwartz, all these guys are active. They're all out there, but notice where they are.
Jimmy Schwartz is going to be trying to stop Drew Brees on Sunday.
But look where they are. They're to the left of the head coach, all right? They're not blowing the whistle as the head coach. And the Lions are magnificent at finding guys who should be defensive or offensive coordinators and never anything else, and elevating them to head coach and finding out that they can't do it. And then they go, I'm telling you right now, you guys don't believe this. Statistically, nobody who has head coached the Lions has ever gone on to be a head coach again in like the last 40, 50 years. Okay. There was one guy who, for like, he was an interim coach for a couple of games, and then he got to be a head coach for a year or someplace else. Other than that, literally every guy who has head coached the Lions has never head coached.
But Steve Mariucci plays a head coach on television now, Mitch.
Yeah, we do send a lot of people to TV.
All right, listen. Okay, so anyway, that's the NFL. And again, we have as wide open a tournament at this stage in the season as I can ever remember. We thought we were going to have a wide open game on Monday night in Santa Clara, and it didn't quite work out that way for Nick Saban and the Roll Tiders.
At 16-14, I'm thinking, you know, we're going to have, you know, 41-40, 40-38. We're going to have a great finish. And it was terrific. It was great entertainment. And then talent happened. Trevor Lawrence happened.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Huh? Oh, my goodness.
And there you go.
Best picture, A Star Is Born.
Do you think that Clemson won that game or Alabama lost?
Oh, boy, that's a great – Mitch, that is a great question because – I thought we would get to that, but you have just put your finger on it. Alabama lost that game as much as Trevor Lawrence won it, and I'll tell you something else, Mitch. Nick Saban panicked. He panicked by going in, even though he made it, a fourth down from his own 30 or whatever it was early in the game. And then with the fake field goal, it's almost like they had been hit and they were woozy and they didn't know what to do. Mitch, that is a great point, because for all the props we can give to Trevor Lawrence, Alabama did everything possible to not make this a good football game.
Yeah. I think their defense was really exposed, and I think Saban realized that when he was trying to extend the offense and keep him on the field. And, you know, not that symbolically, more than game-wise, you knew that this thing was over when Jalen Hurts comes out and basically gets snuffed in the first several plays that he's out there. And you realize this is Nick Saban's last Hail Mary with this team. Let me put Jalen Hurts out there, see if we get some kind of magic back. And he looked every bit as bad as Tua did and the rest of the team did out there. But I agree with you that Alabama lost this. When you give up 44 points in a championship and you're Alabama and you only score 16 on your own end, you look like you don't belong. There's something the matter. And I don't know, this is not some permanent flaw in Alabama's program. I have absolutely no doubt that they will be back next year and probably playing this game again, probably again against Clemson, because they're bringing back all the same guys. But their defense was really exposed in this.
Was there not a canary in the mine shaft moment this year when they were 10-10 with Citadel at the half? A vulnerability,
yes, but let me ask you guys this question, because I was talking about it with my boys. All right, here's my question. Because I thought Tua would play great. I thought this was going to be, you know, one of those quarterback matchups in the big game, and he did not. How different, and I know this sounds like, how'd you like the show, Mrs. Lincoln, okay? If he doesn't throw those two picks in the first half, and the second one, even though the first one was a pick six, and I have this theory, and I'd have to look it up, how often you lose when you give up an easy pick six like that, okay? The second one, they had just made the crazy fourth down, okay? And you think that he's going to take them right back down the field again, and I thought this, even though the first one was a pick six, I thought the second interception was devastating, not only to Alabama's chances, but to Tua's confidence.
Very possibly. Yeah, I'm not going to argue that. I think it was very much a contributing factor. Yeah, very much so. And then, you know, then the flip side.
For them, Bob and Mitch, they got to go back and look at this game and pick out just four or five plays that were everything. And of course, you can't dismiss the way the kid, you know, a kid who was, 8 months ago walking around high school, Trevor Lawrence?
No, he came in early. It was one of those deals. I think he came in, you know, he graduated early.
It was a surpassing performance, passing and surpassing at the same time.
Yeah. Well, we can't be shocked at that. I mean, we saw one last year, you know, in the second half. And freshmen, I don't know what it is. I remember being that age, and there was no way I could have handled running through the tunnel of these games, let alone the magnitude and the spotlight. There's something about these kids who come out as freshmen and join these major programs, maybe because high school football is now as big as it is in some places and they're more used to it. But it's astonishing to me for kids to be 18, 19, even 20 years old, handling this kind of spotlight and looking like he's just basically there was a story that said, I guess he's a big Chick-fil-A fan, Trevor Lawrence, and
who's
and,
not and, Mitch, by the way, who's not,
and he comes in the tunnel with all the fuss that's going on and everybody's, you know, congratulating him, all the rest. He notices that they're, and he goes, we're getting Chick-fil-A, you know, because I guess they had Chick-fil-A as they were serving it to them after the game. So I don't know where this kind of calm comes from. I said the same thing about Tua last year when he comes off the bench. Yeah. But he was a huge part of it. But I still think this was Alabama losing, Alabama's defense being exposed, the mistakes that you pointed out correctly, Mike, that Tua doesn't normally make, and just the wheels coming off of the machine. And in college football, unlike the NFL, where the NFL, the mantra all the time is every team is a quality team. Any team can beat you on any given Sunday, and that's why you see some of the upsets that you do. And you get to see the level of competition all around the league every single Sunday. In college football, sometimes you don't see the level of opponent until you're playing them in a championship. And I think that that's what happened here. You know, that, yeah, they played them last year, but during the course of this season, they didn't play anybody that had Clemson's kind of firepower and defense until they played Clemson.
Well, you can make a case for Georgia, you know, as a very tough opponent. And of course,
well,
they
yeah,
had to struggle
and that
to
was
beat
a close
Georgia.
Game. And that was people, a close game, right?
And people thought that Georgia was worthy of, you know, many people thought that Georgia was worthy of being in the tournament.
Yeah. My friend Joe Scarborough of Morning Joe, who's obviously a Crimson Tide alumnus and he had been saying in the run-up to the big game that Georgia was the second-best team in the country. And after the game, he said, Georgia's still the second-best team in the country.
All right, so, but I think Mitch make a very valid point, and that was also true. This is the first, I mean, Clemson hadn't faced anybody near Alabama's level, and they're coming out of the ACC. So, and what it does it not tell us, well, all right, so I would dispute that Georgia is that, I think they would, in any best of 10, I think Alabama would win at least 7. But,
I don't think that at all. I haven't seen that game, Bob. Mm, I don't think that at all.
All right, that's fine. We can disagree. But still, in terms of ongoing programs, you know, we got to draw a line that they are, and you know, we got two teams that are, you know, in their own league and everybody else. As the coach of Clemson would say, ROIs, but
ROI. I love that he's still saying that, you know, as he's sitting on the top of the world. No, we're just the rest of y'all.
I'm telling you, he's hard not to.
And he stands in great contrast to Nick Saban. You know, the more that Nick Saban is the other coach, the more that Dabo Swinney looks more like the fun loving, easygoing, uses the word joy. And you know, Nick is so serious and so scowling all the time, and Dabo Swinney seems to be having fun. But for all of that, I wouldn't be surprised if we see them again next year. Now, we may not see Jalen Hurts on that roster last year. And it's something I want to bring up before we close out, because Jalen Hurts has now entered his name into the transfer portal. He's got a year left.
Don't you love that expression?
Though? Yeah, I learned something very definitely there. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah, the transfer portal.
Is there a first-class portal and then...
there's coach. Yeah. No, there is. There's coach, there's first-class, and there's...
Or is there a TSA pre-portal? Is there a TSA pre-portal, Mitch?
Yeah, you can. If you play for a major program, there's a pre-portal. You can go right in. You don't have to get inspected. And then it transports you, apparently, to some other universe once you go through this portal. And he is hardly the only guy to do this. And I think this is a big story now in college football. It was an occasional phenomenon that has now become a regular phenomenon. If a top-ranked quarterback, top-rated quarterback out of high school goes to a college program and finds himself playing behind somebody, or another guy comes in, he switches. And you are looking now across the board at transfers who are having significant effects on championship-level teams, and coaches bailing on quarterbacks halfway through a season and then watching those quarterbacks disappear. Hurts is only, you know, the most recent. I mean, you know, the national champions switched their quarterback halfway through to go to Trevor Lawrence, who became the MVP of the game. But the guy that who was playing before him is now leaving the school. What do you make of this in terms of its overall effect on college football?
I think it's great.
And I don't have any worries. Look, the coaches at that level, they adjust. They're all going to adjust.
Why do you think it's great, Mike?
No matter what.
Because the coaches do it all the time, Mitch. And the idea that this makes their job tough. Okay, Dana Holgorsen just left West Virginia, and it was like tipping money that $2.5 million had to change hands between Houston and West Virginia because this guy left. These guys do it all the time. They up and leave kids they recruited. Okay, and if I were a star high school player, the first question I would make to these hucksters sitting in my living room, whether they're Nick Saban or Dabo or anybody else, will you be there for as long as I'm there? And if the answer is no, I would say, good, I'm going somewhere else.
Problem is, even if they say yes, they can change their mind. I don't have any sympathy, Mike, for the coaches either, simply because they all adjust. It's just like college basketball and one and done. They adjust. Look, who has gone farther? Stop me if I'm running too amok here. Who has gone farther in a 180 than Coach K, who once upon a time would not hang a banner in their gym of a former player because until they graduated, and now has out Calipari'd Calipari and is the new king of one and done. So, you know, they can adjust. These college football coaches will similarly adjust at that level.
Well, but jumping to the pros is different than jumping to another team. And I'm not criticizing this move. I can't argue with your
I'm just talking about the idea of, you know, the roster problem and all that.
Yeah, but I wasn't asking for it so much. I wasn't asking so much of the poor coaches. And I don't argue or take umbrage with what you're saying, Mike, at all. I have no sympathy for coaches. I just wonder for the overall game. You know, when you move a piece on the board to another team, the person who was recruited there to go play that now also has to move. You know, you look at what's going on with Justin Fields now and transferring to Ohio State because Georgia went with another guy. And then Ohio State, you know, whoever was sitting there at Ohio State now wants to transfer someplace else. And I just don't think this is good overall for the whole game.
For semi-pro football? I mean, these kids are giving themselves what they think is the best chance to have a career in pro football.
Yep.
And if that makes them as cynical as the coaches, I don't care. Because, again, until they start paying these guys who fill the stadiums and make the coaches rich, then we can have another conversation. But until they do, I am all for these kids giving themselves their best chance at the pros.
I don't think I'm making myself clear. What I'm saying is, when you're a high school player, you're 15, you're 16, you're 17, you're 18, you're being recruited all the time, you're trying to make an intelligent decision as to where you should go to school, where you should, you know, presumably stay 3 years, because it isn't one and done. This isn't college basketball, Bob. You got to stay 3 years at a place. So you are making a three-year commitment, and hopefully there's at least some semblance of you want to be at the school as well as the football team. And so you finally make your decision, and now what all this stuff is going to do is like, well, okay, I used to think I was going there, I was going to sit behind, okay, I know they got a guy who's starting now who's a sophomore, I'm going to go in as a freshman, I'm the top recruit, I'll sit for a year or two, then I'll get my opportunity. That's the way that it's worked in college football for many, many years. Now it's like, okay, I've gotten here, look to my left, look to my right, who might be transferring in? If they're transferring in, I've got to transfer out. I don't see that is good for the game. This isn't about feeling sorry for the coaches. I just don't see that's good for the stability of the sport or the stability of people who play high-profile positions, that it's not limited to quarterback.
But Mitch, are you talking about the good of an institution in which the talent reaps very few of the benefits of the system?
Yeah, but I separate those two things, Mike.
What fear do you have about the institution? Do you think college football is going to be any less popular?
No.
Do you think the stadiums are going to be any less full?
No, and I'm not arguing about the institution, and I'm not defending the institution. I'm talking about the kids themselves. I'm talking about if you are a high-talented high school player who is choosing a school, you have now introduced a whole other element. It used to be when you finally make your choice, you plant yourself down and you hunker in and you try to be the best you can be, and you're going to get your opportunity. Now, arriving at the school means nothing. The minute you arrive at the school, you got to turn left and turn right to see who else might be coming in. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not talking about the institution or the hypocrisy of the NCAA or all the ridiculous money. I'm with you on all of those things. I worry for, not worry like, oh my God, what's going to happen to them, but I have empathy for these recruits who come in and honestly want to choose a school and say, okay, this is where I want to play. And then apparently the strategizing that you thought was over when you made your choice just begins when you get there. And if you say you're Tate Martell in Ohio State, you haven't even really played yet, and you're already transferring out because now they're bringing a guy from Georgia who's coming in to take a place because he got replaced from a guy in Georgia. So that's all I'm saying. This is introduced
as
elements
say,
of...
I'm just trying to understand. When you say you worry about the game, the players are the game, and they now have greater options to move than they ever had before. In the old days, Mitch, you were stuck. And by the way, I don't think Trevor Lawrence should have to spend 3 years at Clemson if he doesn't want to. I think if Trevor Lawrence wanted to come out this year, he ought to come out this year. Because guess what? The game would survive that too.
Look, this phenomenon is not, and this basketball had a phrase for many, many years about over recruiting. And guys, if I'm the point guard, and are they going to recruit the next year another point guard to pressure me? This has been part of the deal. Now I understand what Mitch said, but you know this also all this discussion, you know, puts to rest any naivete that anyone should have about what the nature of this whole enterprise is. Not once have we mentioned that a kid might like to go to a school because of the academic circumstance and would want to stick around just because the school's better than the school that he's that the other school X is a better school than school Y, and this is a better life path for him. No, it's all at that level. There are kids that are doing that, but not meant that that level. These kids are all trying to get to the next level, and this is their path to do it. And no, it's not going to. You know, it's not going to change. It's just not.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna sit on different sides of that in terms of what we think is good for it. But anyhow, it certainly is an undeniable phenomenon. Let's move on to our parting shots as we wrap up this episode. And Bob Ryan, why don't you go first?
Gentlemen, we are in a new age of NBA so-called bigs, mobile seven-footers with multiple skills. Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Carl Anthony Towns, and of course, the Greek Freak. You know these guys. But perhaps the most intriguing and unappreciated of them all is Denver's 23-year-old Serbian big Nikola Jokic.
Oh boy.
The seven-footer is coming off back-to-back triple doubles. Tell me you didn't know that. You didn't know that. Against
didn't
the Heat
it.
And
I
the
knew
Clippers.
That. I knew that.
Okay, good. You go ahead of the class. Only Russell Westbrook and Ben Simmons top his five triple doubles this season. And what most distinguishes him is the third category of a standard triple-double. He is the best passing center since Bill Walton. You heard me. And if you don't believe me, I urge you to go YouTube his pass last night to Jamal Murray. Retrieving a missed shot with his right hand alone, he whirled without a dribble and threw in one motion an 80-foot strike to a streaking Murray for an easy two. This was Bill Russell, Wes Unseld, and yes, Bill Walton territory. But he is far more than just an outlet passer. He makes all kinds of passes. You need to check him out. Also note that his team has the best record in the West. I think there's a connection. Nikola Jokic is the name.
Every year we think that the NFL draft for players is one of the great and mysterious and entertaining crapshoots in professional sports. Oh, no, 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 no. I think the annual draft of new head coaches after more old head coaches have gotten fired is far more entertaining and far more exciting even without the mock drafts. You're watching it play out now. And once again, think that the wisdom of this comes from my dear friend and mentor, the late William Goldman, who once wrote of Hollywood, "Nobody knows anything." Cliff Kingsbury gets fired at Texas Tech, hired as offensive coordinator at USC, and suddenly becomes the guy the Arizona Cardinals cannot live without. Adam Gase gets fired by the Dolphins and not only gets another job immediately, he gets one in the same JV section of the AFC East. Bruce Arians, who got one of those halfway house positions in television, after he stopped being the coach of the Cardinals, goes to Tampa Bay. On and on and on. And it's worth noting with these guys, all of whom failed somewhere else, how rare it is for a college coach to succeed in the NFL, and how rare it is for fired head coaches from the league to have successful second acts. No matter. I'm already working on my 2020 mock draft for these guys.
There's a new front in the Michigan-Ohio State football war. It's called the assistant coach. This past week, Ohio State stole not one, but two of Jim Harbaugh's assistants on the defensive side. On Monday, it was Greg Madison, who coached the defensive line. On Tuesday, it was Al Washington, who coached the linebackers. Next thing you know, Ryan Day, the new Ohio State head coach, will be wearing khaki pants. Greg Madison, in particular, had been in Ann Arbor for 8 years. Washington just won. The larceny of these two made big headlines here in Michigan, particularly since the defense was the calling card of Harbaugh's most recent teams. But what's really at stake here isn't the game day stuff. It's the recruiting. By stealing a rival's assistant coaches, you potentially steal the high school players they've been stalking for years. And you can bet when Madison and Washington go into homes now, they'll be talking about why they chose Ohio State over Michigan and why the kids should too. It's a shrewd move by the Buckeyes and kind of smells like Urban Meyer might have quietly suggested it.
What?
But then, far be it from a Michigan person to suspect Urban Meyer does anything other than what he publicly tells us. All they know around here is that it's bad enough the Buckeyes took the annual showdown, but now they're taking our coaches. We can only hope that when the two teams meet again in November, that the Buckeyes' new defensive additions do their absolute best and allow Michigan to score 62 points the way Ohio State did against them last time. Maybe this isn't such a bad thing after all.
Hey, Mitch.
Yes.
You know who the coach they should try to get in Ann Arbor is from Ohio State? Urban Meyer.
That will wrap up our Friday edition of the Sports Reporters. Forgive Mike Lubick. He lives on the East Coast, everybody who's listening to us in the Midwest. We do this every Monday and Friday, so we'll be back in just a couple of days. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment. If you didn't, leave us two comments. You can catch this podcast anywhere you get popular podcasts, including radio.com. Until we see you again, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.
That would be the move I would make.